We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda and Mitsubishi Sports Open Line.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, it's pretty obvious my math skills are horrible because I said 3 minutes. We're only going to take a minute break because the people want to hear from Joe Vitale.
Oh,
the people want to hear from Joe Vitale. So we had to get to the fourth period. Oh, Amy Markscores is here too. Sorry, Amy.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hey, guys.
Well, Amy showed up.
No, we're hanging out to the fourth period. We're hanging out to the fourth period. We're going until 11 o'clock tonight because we figure why not do a little bonus post-game reaction for tonight's win, because this one may have been one of the biggest wins this season for the Blues, defeating Tampa Bay and snapping a seven-game win streak and sweeping the Lightning this season for a team that had won 58 games coming into this one. Honestly, there has to be nothing sweeter than this feeling right now for those guys in the locker room.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good measuring stick. I mean, you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, you look at, you know, any big team that comes in here. When they went to Tampa, they beat, you know, in some ways I really like the 1-0 overtime game a little bit better in Tampa Bay, because I think it was just a tight game defensively. It really felt like a Stanley Cup playoff game. Tonight was a little bit back and forth, a little bit loose both ends defensively. I love how the Blues got up in the game and they put Tampa in the deep hole being 3 goals down, but we certainly saw that, you know, no lead is safe enough. Tampa Bay could easily have tied it in the second period and gone and run with it. Another chance in the third to tie it at 4. But how about a great call by Sean Farrell?
Yeah.
The video coach of St. Louis Blues. And, you know, I know a lot of fans out there don't understand how this works, but you have a coach, and for St. Louis, it's Sean Farrell. He's been here, part of this organization for a while. He's got about 3 monitors. He looks like Neo from The Matrix in that movie. Got all these screens going on at
great
once.
Great reference.
He's scouting. He's doing different things for the pregame, for the next game. He's watching this game. But one of his big jobs is keeping an eye on replays in situations just like that. And I honestly, I did not catch it. I don't know about you guys what you saw. I did not catch it. And I saw Perron go back to the box. I thought David got another penalty for mouthing off to the referee. And then Chris Kerber was like, no, I think they're going to recall this back. And, I mean, you talk about, you know, timely saves and for a goaltender. But that was a timely save for the video coach.
I have to say that offsides challenge was on point.
Dang, because it was Brayden Point. Get it?
Thanks, guys. I'll be here all night, folks.
No, those are crickets that you're hearing right now, Amy. Honestly, though, for Sean Farrell to do that, and you do take a chance in that situation to challenge it, because if it is not called back, that's a penalty for the Blues, and then you're going back on the power play, which essentially is giving you an opportunity to fall apart, really. So the fact that they challenged that meant that they knew exactly what they were doing, and I didn't see it.
Yeah,
I did not see that offsides at all, but I did see Craig Berube immediately start looking at that monitor, and for them to call that at that moment is incredible, and that just goes to show you. We've talked with Sean Farrell before, Amy. Like, we've sat down and had him kind of show us what goes into the video judging side of it as he's back there watching it. And he's talked to us that it's a lot of starting and stopping. It's a lot of making check marks. It's a lot of making checkpoints of saying, okay, we've got to go back and reference that. But when something that big happens in a moment's notice, you're looking at it, you're reviewing it, you're making the call, and then you have to get the announcement out to the coaching staff so they can make the call.
Sean Farrell has one of the most stressful jobs, and it flies under the radar, right? You know, as Joey mentioned, it's not something that's visible that fans see or talk about. But he has to be so sharp and so quick, not only with his decision-making, but with the statistics and the observations that he's making about the game and all the information and the data that he's collecting. I could in no way do that job.
No.
I get so laser focused. I see one part of the screen and then that's all I see. Or I see one part of the game. I don't know how. It's my worst nightmare is having to keep track of what Sean Farrell keeps
track of. I get distracted too. I'm like Doug in the Up movie. Like, oh, score. Like, I'd be watching this over here, like, oh my God, no, wait, what's going on, you know?
That's like me when I'm watching the game, I see a guy throw popcorn across a couple rows, I just get my eyes just drawn on the popcorn guy, you know what I mean?
Shout out to the kid, by the way, who played the game where it is stacked in the Blues favor, the Blues fan favor, where they show the entire, you know, Blues player and his number and his name, and you have to guess who it is. And then they have the Bolts player, and it's just like a piece of cloth. But no matter who they showed on the screen, this kid was like, Alex Pietrangelo. Nope, that's Ryan O'Reilly.
That's how my matching games go, right? You just pick one name, and sooner or later you're going to get it right.
He's stuck with it the whole time. It's like guessing C on the ACT for every question, which, by the way, you used to get an 11 if you did that.
I think I got
really?
An 11 on it.
I think I may have gotten 11 on my SAT then.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. You know, Sean, too, I mean, he's so busy. You know, the guy, has he shaved? When's the last time Sean shaved?
He hasn't shaved, and he looks like he hasn't slept since the season began.
That's how busy, to Amy's point about how busy this guy is and how in tune you got to be. The guy doesn't sleep. He doesn't shave. He got the win tonight, though, I tell you
what. He did get the win.
He got the hard hat.
I'm sure he probably got the Bobby Plager gloves as well, because what a victory there. But honestly, on the ice, when you have a callback of a goal that ties it, and I don't know if you've ever gone through this, Joey, but I can only imagine what that does for players, because your head dips immediately like, oh, great, we just let them back in this hockey game after being up by two again. And then it goes back and says, okay, change of plans, guys. Let's keep this bad boy rolling. Let's hem them in their zone. Let's get back to the way we were playing. And then they had to kill off another power play, and they got through that.
You know, I think that in some ways that you actually have more energy after a situation like that. And I think we saw that right after the goal got called back. You know, Tampa Bay, they're still on the power play. They only had like a minute 30 at the time.
Yeah.
They still had a lot of time left,
right.
But they didn't have anything. Like, they couldn't get into the zone. The clears were crisp. I thought 5-on-5 play from there was exceptional. I think that was really a turning point. And you mentioned, you know, what happens to a team. You know, it's like going through a drive-thru at McDonald's and in the breakfast, and you ask for an English muffin or Egg McMuffin, and they say, we don't have any, and you're just deflated, right? But then they come back on and say, oh, actually, you know, we have one more left. You're like, oh, man, and it's going to be the best, you know, Egg McMuffin you ever had, because for a while there you didn't think you were going to have it, and now you got it. It's kind of the same thing, you know?
I honestly don't think that's ever happened to me before. Go to McDonald's, can I get a McMuffin? Oh, we're out. Oh, wait, we just found one.
You know, it just tastes that much sweeter.
Do you want that? Do you want that random McMuffin that someone found on a tray?
We found one is the last thing you want to hear at a McDonald's.
Nobody wants to hear someone at a restaurant say, oh, hey, we just found this random piece of food back here for you.
You know what? Going back to that offsides, though, and I wrote this down and totally forgot it, and Nicholas Hand, who's a big Blues fan and he's on Twitter, he pointed out, he said, don't forget Barbashev with that good stick in the right lane to create that offsides.
Big
Barbashev
time.
Was a man on fire.
Big time. That was his stick. And if you remember, about a minute later, he was another stick right at the exact point. He denied the entry, and then they got a 200-foot clear from, I believe, Pietrangelo. And that was a big key.
Yeah.
And this is a big key for why the Blues penalty kill has been so good. And you look at it, it's just they create that wall. And there was a time here tonight, Hedman took it all the way up to the red line on the power play. He dropped it like a zone and a half back, almost to the goal line, and then Braden Point came flying through. And then I watched Ryan O'Reilly. He was back at his own blue line. He stopped. He went all the way up to the red line. He had to gain speed and regroup. And a lot of players don't do that. A lot of players just kind of get standing still. And that's why those drop passes really work. But when you have forwards that recognize the drop and they gain ice and they regroup and they start gaining speed, then you can match that speed. And that's really one of the reasons why the entries were just so sloppy for Tampa, and they were so good for the Blues, and really caused a lot of problems here for Tampa tonight.
Special teams was huge tonight, guys. I mean, a huge reason why this team picked up two big points against Tampa Bay. Because not only did you go 1-for-2 on the power play with that great goal by Robert Thomas, but you went 3-for-3 on the penalty kill against Tampa Bay. Now, I know obviously the goal that went in and then it came back out, but it doesn't matter. That didn't count. But if you think about it, Tampa Bay is the best power play unit in the National Hockey League, and you just shut them down. Pittsburgh, when you just played them, was top 5, if not top 3 at the time, and you knocked them down 4-for-4. So to do that against two of the elite power play units is just giving more confidence to this team. And when you get to postseason action, Amy, special teams is the most crucial point in those games. Those are difference makers.
Absolutely. We talked about the barn burner that happened on Wednesday night between the Washington Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning that saw the Lightning win 5-4 in overtime. That was a story. That was a game written in special teams. Tampa Bay really put themselves in some penalty trouble. They had 21 minutes of penalties. They were shorthanded 6 times, and yet they went 3-for-3 on the power play against the Capitals and were able to come up on top in that game. And I talked to Braden Point about it today. And he said their confidence in their special teams is extraordinarily high, but also their confidence that they can win a game or come back from any deficit is also extraordinarily high. He said there's not one game or one situation that we've been in where we don't feel like we can win the game. We never feel out of it.
Did you have that feeling in Pittsburgh when you guys played there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Chris and I were up here watching the game. Even though we had 3-0, we were talking between periods. We're like, hey, we got to be careful. Just you got that feeling, right?
Yeah.
In Tampa Bay, there's just no, you know, the feeling is just there's no stress. Like you get down 2 goals, you're up 3 goals. It's just kind of plain, like even keel kind of feeling on the bench. And you know that at any point when you're ready to play, you're going to play. And you're not only going to play, but you're actually going to score goals. And I think that Tampa is feeling that way. And they have every right to feel that way. I mean, they have just completely dominated this season. You mentioned the individual points, but already President Trophy. I mean, just what they've done is incredible. They've earned the right to feel that way. And this is, I mean, again, this is a scary group. And the Blues handle them very well here tonight. And you know, at times you have to say that, you got to protect the lead. In order to protect the lead, you got to drive, you got to play offensive, you got to get to the forecheck, you got to get to the offensive zone. In some ways, I don't even think that would have helped here tonight. I think with the way the Blues were coached, the way they played in this third period, I think they just protected the lead. I think they kept it really tight. They were making the wall plays. They were advancing the puck zone to zone. They weren't looking to manufacture anything unnecessary. And it really was just a really good game plan from the get-go. And just well coached from all angles. The coaching staff did a great job here tonight. And the Blues really came out and performed well.
You know, someone threw the question out this afternoon after the morning skate to Craig Berube of what the feeling is for him, knowing that he's being recognized for the Jack Adams Award, which is obviously the best overall coach in the league. And obviously you got a guy like John Cooper who's in the conversation, and a guy like Barry Trotz is in the conversation, and who knows how that voting is going to turn out. But the fact that Craig Berube has altered this season, and I talked to Brian Engblom about this today, and he said Craig Berube's a no-nonsense guy. Like, he has that look to him that if you do something wrong, he's going to rip your head off. And obviously, he's not going to rip your head off, but he has that look. But he said that has a lot to do with his reputation in that locker room. Like, he has conversations with guys. He talks to guys. He's not afraid to talk with guys. But to know that he has done this with this team, turn an entire season around, goes a long way. And you can compare the numbers, but to turn a team around and then turn a season around has a lot to do with the guy when he comes into the consideration of Coach of the Year.
Well, I think, too, you know, him in answering that question, and I think he's dealt with this question a lot, and what does he always say? He always goes, you know, the credit goes to the players.
Yeah, and I'm not paying attention to
it. The credit goes to the players. And
right.
he keeps saying that. And I think that, you know, I think he's really endeared his teammates to him, because there's nothing worse for a player than you have a head coach with an ego, and then you have a head coach that wants a spotlight on him or draws attention to him. I've had coaches in this league that have done just that, and they kind of make it about themselves and awards, and they kind of are always in the front line. And I think Craig Berube, especially with the resume he has, not only as a player but as a coach, he's done just a terrific job of humbling himself and just putting the players first and foremost. And you mentioned why players want to play for him. And I think at the core of it all is really that, because they know that this is a coach about us and we want to be about them. And it's that relationship, that trust that is being built from the players and the coach. And I think he's just handled the media just exceptionally. And I think he's just really grabbed that room. And I think just a really good common understanding between him and the players. And it's been working.
Yeah, it has been. And Amy, if you look at the turnaround that multiple players have had in that locker room this season, and Oscar Sundquist, and Ivan Barbashev, who played with Berube in the minors. And then you got bigger name guys like a Braden Schenn, like a Jaden Schwartz, like a Vladimir Tarasenko, who was silent for a while. But I don't think there's any bigger than the influence of what Berube has had on a player than Jordan Binnington. I mean, he's talked about it, obviously putting the faith in him of being in between the pipes, but the calmness that Binnington has a lot to do with the faith that Craig Berube has in him.
There really was a convergence of, whether it was Jordan Binnington, the coaching change, what you're saying, the message that Binnington was bringing, that Berube was bringing to the locker room. And it all happened at the right time, where maybe if you isolate one of those things, you don't see as drastic of a turnaround. But it was Berube and his message and Binnington being historically good right out of the gates as a rookie, which you can't count on that happening. But that happened at the right time, just as the players are continuing to buy into Berube's message, because you have to see some kind of success results. It's hard to believe in a message when you're not seeing the success. And they were already gaining that traction. They were already improving. That improvement started in December, but it was a slow gain. Then when it was catapulted over across that line, out of the basement, out of the cellar of the NHL, on the back of Jordan Binnington's play, I think that's when Greg Berube's message was absolutely solidified in this locker room. And that's when this team really got an identity as a team. The lines had an identity. The players had an identity. You can talk about Alexander Steen and what a team player he's been, and how Berube took him aside and talked to him before he moved him down to the fourth line. And Steen, being the consummate player, has brought, as Berube said, an identity to that fourth line. I don't think you can look at a part of this team and say they look confused or they don't know what they're supposed to do or what they're supposed to be. And that message, and correct me if I'm wrong, that ability to congeal this team is what Berube has brought to this locker room.
I agree. I think that, you know, what you said, it was very, it's true, Amy. I mean, just the message being just simple and straightforward. And this is what guys want. They just want to be told something simple, direct. And in hockey, it's, I know we sometimes we complicate it, but it's a very simple game. It just really comes down to just the team that just works, hustles, competes, wins one-on-one battles, or is going to win the game. Every player in this league can win a game. Every player in this league can score. Every player in this league can defend. It really just comes down to which team, which players individually are going to compete and have that urgency in their game. And the coach's job is to get that message across to your players. And Craig does it in a very simple, direct, straightforward way. If you're good, he's going to tell you you're good. If you're not good enough, he's going to tell you you're not good enough. And I think that the coaching, the Jordan Binnington, all these things coming together, like you mentioned, a perfect storm, really just has contributed to this turnaround. And I was sitting up here with Chris, and as he was talking about the points and right when the game ended and how they're about 5 points out, and that's the magic number to get in the playoffs. And my mind just went right back to part of that perfect storm in my mind, which I think turned the season around. And I think that's the fight with Robert Bortuzzo mm-hmm. and yep. Zach Sanford happened mm-hmm. December 10th. I just looked at the date, and I remember how bad they were and how they were towards the bottom, and then Bortuzzo fights Sanford. And I just remember the turmoil moving forward, the next couple of days especially, in the social media with Twitter and Instagram and all these, you know, TSN and all these, you know, NBC Sports and all these people from around the league just looking at St. Louis like they were a joke. They were a joke. You know, Doug Armstrong put this team together. They're in last place. They're fighting each other. This team cannot get it figured out. I think truly this team at that moment just was embarrassed. I think the players in that locker room were embarrassed. They were ashamed of themselves. I think that, to add to your point of Berube and Binnington, I think that feeling of being embarrassed, that just sparked this team. Enough's enough. We're going to come together because this is not how it wants to go. And they really moved forward from that moment on. And that was shortly before that road trip to Western Canada, which Craig Berube said to me that was the road trip that really turned this thing around.
Yeah.
And wasn't that fight, too, the day after David Perron was a healthy scratch? And Perron's has a lot of pride. I mean, he went through a lot last year. He's an elite player. It's difficult to be a healthy scratch, no matter who you are. And shortly after that, David Perron caught on fire.
Well, complete terror.
And that was less than a month after Mike Yeo was fired and Berube replaced him. So it was kind of the perfect storm of you get a coaching change, healthy scratches are starting in, you're still losing hockey games, and then you have that fight, and then you go on the road, and then the camaraderie kicks in, and then everyone kicks into the 11-game win streak that they went into. Guys, let me throw this at you before we go to a quick break. This win tonight puts the Blues within 2 points of Nashville, and with Winnipeg's victory in clinching that playoff spot, I believe it's within 6 points of the Winnipeg Jets. Do those two teams fear the Blues even more now than what they did before tonight's game of facing them in the playoffs?
I think so. Yeah, and I think that the game in Tampa, I remember Chris and I talking before the game saying, yes, you just beat Columbus on the road. Yes, you just beat the Panthers on the road. But if you win tonight, you got a big target on your back, and every team in this league is now going to take you seriously. Everyone's going to be like, whoa, St. Louis just beat Tampa? You got to be kidding me. Everyone's going to recognize you. Well, I think that same thing tonight, Amy, and I think you looked at how the Blues performed here tonight with the steam and how they're rolling forward, and then to knock off the best team in the league, I think it's got to bring some attention to the table.
I would think so as well. And what's really interesting is John Cooper talked about that 1-0 Blues win a while back. And he said that win kind of woke them up a little bit. They didn't lose that game because they played a bad game. He said that was a good game, but St. Louis's style of play threw Tampa off their run-and-gun style. He said the St. Louis Blues grind you down. They have such an aggressive forecheck. They play so hard below the blue line. He said you can survive one game. He goes, I can't imagine what it would be like to play against that style of play for 7 games. This was something I also brought up with Braden Point. Do you view the Blues differently now that they've changed from the team that they were earlier on in the season? He said, absolutely. He said, this is so different from what the style of play that we're used to playing, the way the Blues play, and how it wears you down. So I wonder if fellow Central Division teams have that respect that the Tampa Bay Lightning had for several weeks now, for a couple of months now, and if this is the point where they look at the Blues, like you said, and say, okay, they're for real, or if it's easy to kind of overlook
what's interesting about that
fellow
though
division.
Is, what's interesting about that, though, is Nashville is also the team that has swept the series against Tampa Bay this season. And Nashville
and Minnesota.
And Minnesota is dip as well, but Nashville is the team that only beat St. Louis once. So I want to take a quick break here on the fourth period, and when we come back, look at the standings, because the Blues honestly have a chance to catch Winnipeg, if not, and it seems more likely to catch the Predators, but they could catch Winnipeg when you look at the rest of the schedule. So it's the fourth period. Joe Vitale, Amy Markscores, Alex Ferrario hanging out. Also Ryan Schulte, Zach Schmidt back in the studios. We're here until 11 o'clock tonight on KMOX. All right, so the best part of the fourth period is how we get sidetracked, and we get sidetracked an awful lot, but I thought what better way to get sidetracked than some odd text, or odd tweet, that is, that Amy Markscores put out there, and that Vasilevsky goal that he gave up to Braden Schenn. That was a very slow-motion goal where it just trickled past him and he tried to reach his hand out. So afterwards, Joe, Amy puts this out there on Twitter. The way Vasilevsky looked as he watched the puck cross the goal line on Schenn's goal is exactly how I felt when my iPhone fell in the toilet.
Wow.
So, Amy, divulge us.
This is a true story. First of all, this is a true story.
Is this a true story? No, but it brings up the question. Do you grab the phone?
Good question.
Well, what is the question that's most important before you say, do you grab the phone?
Well, is it pre or post? And I'm going post, because pre, I think I'd pick it up.
Yeah.
I mean.
Does it depend on whose toilet? Like, what if you're at an airport?
Oh, no. If it's at a, no. Now, yeah, now you're throwing in X factors.
First of all, you always grab the phone.
Yeah, you always grab the phone.
No way. I mean,
you cannot exchange the phone if you don't have a phone to exchange.
You cannot go to your phone supplier and say, hey, my phone went in the toilet. Give me a new one.
Hey, Apple cares.
Yeah.
They say, well, where's the phone? Well, you know, you need the phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the scenario. It's dropped.
Okay.
Post.
Okay. One or two.
You said it.
So you said it. We're going to go one, because I don't want to go to two.
You
went. We're going to go post post one.
Well, you're a girl, so no girls do two. So
yeah,
it's
that's true. That's true. That's not a thing. I'm so glad someone else believes that with me.
Is that true?
Wait, what? Guys.
Focus here.
Reel it in. Post one, do you pick it up?
No. Never. I would get a new phone.
You would go get a new phone.
Yes. And depending.
No way.
Like, I may never. I mean, and if it's like a public toilet, I just walk out. I never look back.
So you're going to leave it to the janitor to pick up?
You're also taking a chance that it's broken, and you just stuck your hand in the toilet for a broken phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's broken.
I'd get it. And then I would clean it as much as possible.
Oh, no, you can't clean it.
You just got to get that that blower thing with in the keyboard, that the CO2 sprayer. Just blow the heck out of it.
Just blow the urine out of your cell phone,
just
right?
Blow the urine right out of the old chip card. Pop in that little chip
just
card.
Just bust out the SM card and blow the urine out of it.
That's it. Honey, where's my CO2 blower? You know what I mean?
The rice thing doesn't work for that, that's for sure.
No.
All right, before we say anything else that we're going to regret standings-wise, so the Blues right now.
Are we on the air right now?
Oh, well, this wasn't a break? This wasn't a break. I hope Zach kept us potted down on that one. So the Blues with 88 points, Nashville with 90 points, and Winnipeg now with 94 points. All of those teams, Winnipeg and St. Louis, both with 7 games left, Nashville with 6 games left. Here's the schedule the rest of the season. Nashville plays Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Buffalo, Vancouver, Chicago. Winnipeg plays Dallas, New York Islanders, Montreal, Chicago, Minnesota, Colorado, Arizona. Both fairly difficult schedules. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to get the top spot.
But Winnipeg was the second group right there?
Winnipeg was the second
group. That's the tough group, especially those last three are all teams like right on the verge right there.
Dallas, New York. Dallas is on the verge. Islanders are in. Montreal's on the verge. Chicago technically is on the verge. Minnesota's on the verge. Colorado's in. And then Arizona's on the merge.
I really think that depending on how Monday goes versus Vegas, if we win that game and we clean this homestand,
yeah,
then we're going to New York, right?
Yeah.
Back-to-back against two struggling teams.
And the Devils.
Two struggling teams, yep. Rangers and Devils.
And then you come home.
If you win Monday,
yeah,
I think you put yourself in a perfect spot, not to only catch Nashville, but to take over the Central.
Yeah, Nashville, I feel like, is still a chance, but Winnipeg's the one that you're kind of on the cusp with. You need things to help. But still, those are really two tough schedules to go up against, Amy.
They are. I can see the Blues overtaking Nashville, and I feel good about it. I feel good about the home ice advantage. Just looking as a fan, that's how I feel. Like, all right, I think they can do this. And I like the idea of playing Nashville. I would rather play Nashville
than one of the wild card teams.
Or even one of the wild card teams, to be honest.
I don't know if you'd play Winnipeg.
No, you wouldn't play
Winnipeg. Winnipeg would really have to fall apart.
They would if you were saying jumping them.
Yeah.
Winnipeg would have to fall apart. You're not going to play them. I would feel better playing Nashville than a wild card team.
I think everybody would, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, that's the fan in me speaking. It's probably a stupid thing to say.
Tell you what, though.
But that's how I feel.
As much as we're talking about this when it's the three teams, and I know it's a lot further, but Dallas with 82 points, 6 behind the Blues. But they're getting Matt Zuccarello back. Mm-hmm. And we saw the effect he had on that first game with them. And in our final 2 minutes, that could be a scary team the final 6 or 7 games of the season.
They can be. Yeah, they're going to make a charge for sure. And I think the Blues, the motivation for them to, you know, assuming they get into the playoffs, it's got to be to keep going for the top spot.
Yeah.
And if I'm a player in the Blues, I want to get that top spot because that means Winnipeg and Nashville are going to face each other in the first round.
Right.
And that's one team you don't have to hit.
Yeah.
But if playoffs were right now, right, you're playing Nashville, and then you got to get through them, and then you probably got to get through Winnipeg. So if you get to that first spot, Winnipeg and Nash face each other. One of them is going to knock each other out. And you know that series is going to go 7 games.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to beat the tar out of each other.
Yeah.
So that would be my motivation. But you're right. Dallas is coming up too.
That could be really beneficial to have those two teams whoop up on each other before you see them.
But that's why my illogical stance of if getting to the top spot means you play Dallas, I'd almost rather stay in the second or third to play Nashville. And that could just be the mind game that Jamie Benn and the Dallas Stars have inflicted on Blues fans over this season.
They've tormented us.
Yeah, because I think, as you said, normally you would always want to push for that top spot. You'd want to play a wild card team, but in my mind, I'm worried about that.
It's going to be really fun the rest of the way. To wrap up in our final minute, Patrico, who is on 105.7 The Point, just texted, porta potty, kiss it goodbye.
Oh, 100%.
There's no way I'm going in there to get that.
Easily.
That might be the worst position for a phone to fall into.
Oh, the worst.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
But first of all, why would you pull your phone out in the porta potty? Like, that's the one spot you're going to hand it to someone and say, here, I'm not going to take this in there with me.
That's
right?
True.
Porta potties are scary.
It's like
the seventh level of hell, like Dante's Inferno is probably just a porta potty.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Was it?
Yep. Dante.
Guys, the fourth period never disappoints. Anytime Vitaly and Amy hang around, it's always enjoyable. Guys, we'll talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good.
There you go. Later. Joey and Amy. We'll be back. Blues in Vegas, Golden Knights, Monday night, 7 o'clock puck drop, 6:30 pregame skate. Thank you to Joey and Amy. Thank you to Ryan Schulte and Zach Schmidt. I'm Alex Ferrario. We'll talk to you Monday for more Blues hockey here on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.